Welcome to another episode of Comparing Apples to Oranges. I'm Mike.
I'm Dan.
And just a little background on our podcast. We take two things that belong in the same category but aren't in the same genre. And today we're coming at you with One Hit Wonders. And we're looking at the entire album that the One Hit single came off of. Dan, can you tell me a little bit about One Hit Wonders?
Because sure.
This is your little baby, your little dream
that
we're bringing to life.
Well,
so.
Thanks for having me back on your podcast. I appreciate it. I always enjoy it. Like, as you were saying, the One Hit Wonder thing was something that kind of popped into my head. Trying to think of songs that were One Hit Wonders, and then we only really listen to that song. I know back when I was going to record stores and things like that,
Street Side, of course.
We had, here in St. Louis, we had Street Side. We also had like Sound Warehouse, and we had Sam Goody, and we had there were some other ones too. But I mean, we used to go to the mall, and there would be four or five music stores, and they would have a wall of singles. And the single would usually have two songs on it, and usually like the instrumental versions of the songs too. A lot of times you would just kind of gravitate toward those singles that you heard on the radio, and quite often you would ignore the rest of the albums. I thought it would be kind of cool if we took a couple of one-hit wonders, and I'll kind of talk about what makes a one-hit wonder and where we got that criteria from, but listen to the rest of the album and kind of put it all together and then pick a winner between the two. So we used the 2002 list of VH1's 100 Greatest One-Hit Wonders. And what that did is it listed musicians that had only one American hit. And that's important, I think, that we emphasize American hit, because international success is not taken into account with this list. There's some artists on the list that, it can be argued, had multiple top 40 hits. For example, Vanilla Ice, who some people would say, well, he had more than one top 40 hit, so he's not really a one-hit wonder. However, a lot of these artists who had more than one top 40 hit, some of those hits were, I'm going to call them like coattail hits.
Yeah, they're riding on the coattail.
Exactly. So the only reason that they reached those secondary songs reached top 40 status is because people were still riding the high from their first song.
A little bit of background. The term one-hit wonder is never what a band would call itself. It's usually a pejorative term, so no one wants to be classified as a one-hit wonder. And when Dan said that, it can be argued, like, it's by the fans. It's not by the people who, you know, listen to pop radio. They're not going to say, oh, no, that's not a one-hit wonder. It's these people who follow the careers of this band. And
the thing that I saw on there that there was a lot of discussion is, it's kind of hard to nail down an exact criteria for a one-hit wonder, because if you use the criteria that VH1 was using, then technically a band like the Grateful Dead would be considered a one-hit wonder. But you think of the Grateful Dead as this Hall of Fame rock band.
Most of the band is still touring.
It still has this huge following.
Absolutely.
And it's just, you when you think of the Grateful Dead, you think of a classic rock band.
Right.
Like, you know, a greatest rock band of all time discussion kind of band. I think they only had one or maybe two. I know Truckin' was...
Right. Radio popular songs.
Right. And
that's where the Billboard
and
I don't even know
if that reached top 40. I think it was in the 60s. Like 68 or something like that. And then the other one was Jimi Hendrix that I saw. He had the remake of Bob Dylan's All Along the Watchtower.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, never got anywhere near number one or even top 10.
Oh, I didn't know that.
When you think of that song, you just think of just classic, you know, one of the greatest guitar players of all time and just one of the greatest musicians of all time. You would not even think of categorizing him as a one-hit wonder. But I think his second highest hit was Crosstown Traffic, which was, again, somewhere in the 60s or 70s. So top 100.
Right.
But, again, it went from top 10 to now top 40. Kind of Casey Kasem made the top 40 kind of the cool thing. And then
keeping your feet on the ground, keep reaching for the stars.
Number one with a bullet.
He came up with that?
I think so. I think that was him.
I thought that sounded much more... Maybe I don't understand what that phrase means, but that sounded a lot more hardcore before I realized that guy said it.
We've got a long-distance dedication.
That resonates with me. And then, did Rick Dees take his place? Did they exist at the same time?
I thought
Rick Dees was like Saturday morning.
Yeah, I thought Rick Dees was kind of separate. I thought they were kind of like Pepsi and Coke, but
so okay.
What do I know? But then it kind of expanded to top 100,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's almost like they're reaching for success, like trying to find a reason to make it successful, like expanding the criteria of what a successful
setting the bar
song
lower.
Or, yeah, because, I think so.
I mean, I don't know if it's good if you're number 73 for 1 week
right.
on the Billboard, you know, alternative pop contemporary adult music, because I haven't done a lot of research on any of this, but whenever we start looking up how a band performed, there are so many Billboard charts that it is unbelievable.
Right.
Like, when we were looking up, I found out one of these bands went to number 27 in Hungary, the country Hungary, and I don't know what that means. I didn't, you know, who's keeping track of that stuff? Like, what sort of circulation of music do they get? Because the bands that we're talking about today are both English-speaking, and I don't think that they, maybe they put a song out in Hungarian. I don't know.
And David Hasselhoff is huge over in Germany. So.
Well, that's his last name.
But just the
wait,
fact...
Wait, did he sing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now I'm upset.
I mean,
just
the fact that you say that disappoints me so much, because anybody over that's downloading this over in Germany is going to be so upset with you.
And turn it off, Hans. It's not worth it.
Immediately unsubscribe from your podcast because you're bad-mouthing David Hasselhoff by even insinuating that he didn't sing.
That makes me sound like I'm saying he lip-synced it all.
I believe he...
Can he lip-sync on an album? Or is that just sampling?
Milli Vanilli won a Grammy lip-syncing a whole
album. Performance. Now we're getting into muddied waters.
But another thing about one-hit wonders and a reason why somebody who technically had a second song that was a top 40 song wouldn't be considered a second hit
right.
was, other than the coattail aspect of it, was the recurrent rotation aspect of it that I saw on several websites. And what that meant is that those songs didn't survive being played more than a couple weeks or even a couple months when they were released. So, for example, you'll still hear Ice Ice Baby.
Oh, yeah.
On satellite radio and stations like that, but you might not hear that other song that came out after that. And if you listen to satellite radio, they call these like lost 45s. For example, if you listen to the decade specific stations, like
right.
the 80s stations, they'll say, here's another lost 80s hit,
mm-hmm.
which means it was...
Nobody liked it after the 80s.
Exactly. Or nobody even liked it after a couple weeks or a couple months.
Right.
So it just didn't hang around. It didn't have lasting power. So you can't really consider it a hit just because it came on the heels of another hit. It's like you fed somebody some, you know, good tasting ice cream, and then you immediately put, you know, a different flavor in there.
Right.
And do I really like that ice cream, or is it just because I still have the flavor of the first one
right.
in my mouth? It's a little fishy, but we had to get a set criteria to choose from somewhere. And
right,
I think,
before we came up with our criteria.
Sure.
We
I didn't want it to be subjective on our part on what we felt was a one-hit wonder. I thought that a VH1 list from a credible source like that was pretty good to draw our one-hit wonders from.
Absolutely. Let's talk about them.
Can we just do like a quick rundown of the top 10?
Yeah, so we could see the field where we were going picking.
Sure. So we basically took two one-hit wonders out of the top 10. And what you wanted to make sure is you wanted to make sure that we were really comparing apples to oranges here, that they weren't, that the only things they had in common were that they were one-hit wonders. And
right.
they could have come from the same time period, but we didn't want them to be the same style of music.
Right.
Or we didn't want them to be like both rap albums. We
right.
didn't want them to be
country.
Both, like, you know, hard rock or country. We wanted them to have some difference in there.
Absolutely.
So number 10 is Nina, which was 99 Luftballons.
Oh, yeah. Is that Nana?
Nina.
I don't speak German.
I'm sorry. Again, German people, we are so sorry. Please don't unsubscribe to the podcast.
We'll just get a because, lot of hateful Twitter messages.
Just because Mike is anti David Hasselhoff's music career and I can't pronounce Nana.
Go on. Next one.
Number nine was Gerardo.
Geraldo.
Not Geraldo Rivera. Gerardo.
You don't know that.
Who had the classic Rico.
That was
Suave.
Are you sure that's a song? And that's just, I don't know.
That's
the top 10?
Top 10 one-hit wonders of all time, according to VH1. Hmm. Number 8 was Aha with Take On Me. Number 7 was Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby. Number 6, The Baja Men with Who Let the Dogs Out.
Woof.
Number 5, exactly, woof. Number 5, Tony Basile?
It depends. I don't know.
With Mickey, which had a great music video that accompanied it.
Yeah, the movie Bring It On, right?
Number 4, Right Said Fred with I'm Too Sexy. And they were too sexy.
I remember my uncle had that cassette tape, and I think it had that song was on it twice. It was on the A and B side.
You don't mess with success.
Or sexy says.
With sexy says. With success. Number 3 was Dexy's Midnight Runners with Come On Eileen. Number 2 was Soft Cell with Tainted Love. And number 1 was a couple of elderly...
I thought this was also the Baja Men.
A couple of elderly Hispanic gentlemen.
Right.
Los Del Rio with the song Macarena, which is still played at weddings across the great United States.
Yeah.
And had a dance to accompany it. And had a music video that they put a bunch of young people in to kind of counteract the fact that we have these two elderly gentlemen.
Yeah, but they know what to do.
Doing old man dancing, but it was a hit. It was a classic one hit wonder because.
Now that I've seen this list, I kind of want to know where the Cherry Pop and Daddies are on it. I guess that's more interest than it is.
That's why we need interns to look this stuff up.
What's the youngest song on that list?
The most recent song would be Who Let the Dogs Out in 2000.
Okay.
Now remember, this list is from 2002.
Oh, okay. To me, the idea of a one-hit wonder now, maybe it's because we're living in this era, and so it's hard to like put a historical bent on it, but one-hit wonders don't seem to exist in the same capacity. Bands that are on the radio right now, you're going to hear like 3 of their songs, mm-hmm. and then maybe they'll disappear. So maybe the album will be, well, we were talking about this yesterday, a flash in the pan, mm-hmm. rather than you would just say, oh, that's a one-hit wonder. I don't know. But there might be a lot more metrics that are going into it now.
Talked about on past shows, too, just the fact that in the digital age...
The age in which we're living, by
right.
the way.
Right. Where this is...
Future listeners.
If you're listening to this 50 years from now.
If everything's just, you know, conscious light and sentient gas, we used to live in a digital age.
Right. When World War III happens and everything that's electronic has been wiped out, but you just happen to find a file of this somewhere that somebody converted to a cassette tape. And
backwards
you listen
compatible?
To it on an old Walkman.
Okay, let's be honest. Cassette tape would be the best way to save anything. I mean,
right.
It's going to be that and cockroaches that survive the Mad Max-esque right. reality.
So that's why I'm not getting rid of my Walkman or my cassette tapes. But I don't even remember what we were talking about.
Digital age.
Right, in the digital age, it's so much easier to get music out there.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Know? With
Bandcamp, SoundCloud.
In the MTV age, which is where both of the songs and albums that we're talking about today came from, really the advent of MTV and when it was really hitting its peak, which was the mid to late 80s, before music videos kind of started to become, you know, more for online consumption like that. It was harder to get, the only way you could really get your music out there was if you had a music video that MTV picked up, or if you had a single that local radio stations would pick up. And now we've got satellite radio, which has whole stations dedicated to unknown bands and lesser-known artists and things like that. And like you said, with just the online
YouTube
availability, you can write a song, you can even make a low-budget music video in high definition on your iPhone and upload it to YouTube, and some of it looks better than some of the videos that we saw, you know, back in the 80s. especially with the fact that you can add special effects and, right. and all kinds of things, and just the fact that you have basically a whole soundboard on your computer that you can
download for free,
right, and mix things up and make it sound good. It's just a totally different age. So if you have, for example, like Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, who really were very
independent,
yeah, very
underground, almost.
Very much used, took advantage of the age that we live in now to get their music out there, and then has produced several hits since then.
Right,
they probably wouldn't have been able to do that when these songs came out. That wouldn't have been as easy for them to have the success that they had now back in the mid to late 80s when these songs came out. It's really hard to kind of compare, because especially with iTunes and Amazon and things like that, when you can just download specific songs.
Right. Or just, you know, if you have Spotify, you don't need to download it. You're just going right. to listen to right. whatever you want.
Right, exactly. You don't even have to buy the album right. in order to listen to the whole album. And then after you listen to an album, you can pick, you know, your own two or three singles
right.
off the album. And then if you wanted to actually pay to download them, you could. I think it's important to kind of take that into account as far as when these songs came out and when this list came out, and then where we're at right now.
And then sort of like to put a nail on this, because I think we're ready to discuss the actual meat of what we've chosen, but sort of as a counterpoint to all that, because it's so easy to put stuff out, availability of anything out there is such that it's almost too much noise for you. So I don't understand how something becomes popular, but, you know, I'm also not sitting in an office deciding these things. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's better that I don't like that.
Yeah, and a lot of it,
I don't know that.
And you said with YouTube, I mean, a lot of it is just somebody puts something up on YouTube, somebody thinks it's funny or thinks mm-hmm. it's kind of catchy, and then they share it with their friend, and they share it with a friend. That just was not as easy to do.
Yeah, you know, you give a mixtape to somebody in the
so. Right, and how long would that take to pass from person to person to person, whereas in the age that we're at right now, you just click share.
Right.
Or put it on your Facebook wall or on your Twitter feed or anything like that.
Right.
And it's instantly shared with hundreds or even thousands of people.
If they listen to it. Because
right.
they might have like six and they're like, this one's 2 minutes, no way.
But even if you have 500 friends on Facebook, even if a tenth of that listens to it. I'm not saying I have 500 friends. I'm saying if in this crazy hypothetical popular person has 500 friends on their Facebook, even if a tenth of them
right.
you know, listen to it, and then if they share it, it's just a totally different world as
yeah.
far as and what ends up becoming hits and ones what ends up becoming a one-hit wonder.
Right. All right, let's discuss the two albums we picked. The two one-hit wonders we chose were A-ha's Take On Me from 1985.
Number 8 on the list of VH1's
and
one-hit wonders.
The album that came off of is called Hunting High and Low. This was A-ha's first album. They are a Norwegian new wave pop rock synth pop band. I don't know if synth pop exists anymore, and I wonder if they just call new wave now. Possibly ancient wave, because the 80s was 30 years ago.
Yeah, I think the synth pop thing, just so heavy on the synthesizer, was a very much an 80s thing.
Yeah, that was the new technology.
Right.
And it was...
So we got this, we gotta use it.
And I gotta say, you can definitely tell which bands have mastered it in the 80s and which ones are just think it's a Casio keyboard. And they're like, I just keep banging on this thing. People are gonna love it. They're gonna love it so much.
Yeah.
And then our second one-hit wonder was Come On Eileen by Dexys Midnight Runners. And I gotta be honest, I had no idea that was the name of the band.
Mm-hmm.
And it was off the album, is it Two Rye Eye? Two Rye Eye. It's...
Two
so
Rye
that,
Eye.
No, that's on. The thing. It's Two Rye... Okay, in the song... It is not... Those three syllables never come up next to each other.
Hmm. We were talking about this before we started recording. I asked you what it means, and you said, I think it's just nonsense.
Because,
so if,
you know...
if we're wrong, tweet or comment on the yeah. on the iTunes section. There's, you know, the comment section. Please leave feedback and let us know how stupid we are, I'm sure the entire country of Germany is already
just like six or seven people
like hastily typing away about how much of idiots we are, and they are not wrong.
Das idiots.
they are not incorrect.
Dexy's Midnight Runners, they are considered a new wave blue-eyed soul Celtic folk band. What blue-eyed soul, is that just like white people soul?
That seems like a PC way of saying soul sung by white people, but
I've never heard of blue-eyed blues, because I guess everybody that's not singing blues, they're just like, well, that's crap. We're just not going to call it blues.
I like the Celtic folk description best of all. I think that'll really come out in when we start talking about that, and when you actually listen to the album, I think it is very folksy in presentation and the instrumentation and production. I think you'll really hear that quite a bit. So I don't like the new wave.
I don't know what that description means. I think everybody was new wave in the 80s,
because they didn't know what to call them, so they said, oh, well, it's new wave.
Well, it's not country, it's not Motown, it must be new wave.
Yeah,
what do they call stuff in the 70s? I guess just rock and country?
Disco.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about disco.
I was reading one of my favorite comics the other day, Preacher, and there's a line in there. He hates the word insecure because it's used in so many different ways. You know, you don't want to talk about your feelings, you're insecure. You don't want to do this, you're insecure. It seems like that was in the 90s. That was kind of a word that when people started talking about, you know, your inner child and things like that. That was a word that people overuse. And I think new wave is kind of the same aspect as far as 80s music and late 80s and early 90s music. And I think the same thing kind of happened with alternative.
Yeah, pop.
Right. Anything that wasn't pop was alternative. And because nobody really knew how to describe it. Alternative kind of became like a hodgepodge category that if you didn't fall into any of these categories exactly, you were considered alternative.
Which I guess is the literal definition of alternative, but it was interesting to find out how different the bands inside of alternative were. They should not belong together.
Right. You know, I was thinking about the Red Hot Chili Peppers were considered alternative, and I think even one year at the Grammys they won Best Rap Album.
I mean, Anthony Kiedis can bring it, so...
But that's when you can tell when people really didn't know how to categorize people. Like, he's talking fast, it must be rap.
Yeah.
It just comes back to the new wave argument. I don't really like it. I like the synth pop description, and I like the Celtic folk description, and I think that if you look at it from those aspects, then we are comparing apples to oranges here, even though they're in the same time frame. The albums sound very different.
Right. Dexy's Midnight Runners, Turai, that's what I'm going to call it. I don't know how to say it. Came out in 1982, if I didn't mention that. That was their second album. Dan and I both researched the bands on Wikipedia. Like, there's still... Some of them put out an album like 2010. Yeah. And they have A-ha's Hunting High and Low, their first album from the studio. You could find... They had a remastered edition that came with 4 extra CDs. Just like demos and remixes of Take On Me. And
because you asked for it, here's 3 more CDs.
I don't know, man. I don't remember asking.
You asked for it. I remember when you asked for it.
Although something I did find interesting was, so talking about one-hit wonders and how, I guess VH1 defined it as like a Billboard hit.
Right.
As a number one. And then it never had anything else comparable to that.
Yeah, and I don't even think it had to be an actual number one.
Oh, okay.
I just think it had to be a...
Oh, yeah, I misinterpreted that as number one hit wonder.
Right.
And it's just a one-hit wonder.
Although both of the singles that we're talking about today did reach number one on the Billboard Top 40 in the United States. And that's not in the new wave category.
Isn't it, though?
That was on the actual overall Billboard Top 40 hits. They both reached number one. To be the one-hit wonder, I don't know if you have to be actual number one, but it has to be at least top 40, but probably more, you know, top 10 or top 5.
Recognizable.
Exactly.
So what I brought that up for was one of the songs on Hunting High and Low was remixed, it says, as a dance version. That seems sort of unnecessary to mention. And doubly unnecessary that I would mention it being unnecessary. But it was number 5 top hit on the U.S. dance chart,
right,
which I'm assuming is different than another chart that we brought up, right? Because right. it has that adjective in there. Okay.
Right. Exactly. So
nonsense. Does ballroom dancing, do they have charts?
I'm sure they do. I mean, it's kind of like when somebody says they're a New York Times bestseller. It's,
like they sell those newspapers real well. And it's, they go door to door and just sell the hell out of those newspapers.
It's in a very niche category yeah. of...
alternative cookbooks for vegans.
Written by men under the age of 40.
For women who are over the age of 80.
New York Times, and then if you get that, you're a New York Times bestseller.
It also has to be scratch and sniff, because market's pretty open right now.
Exactly. Top 10 scratch and sniff books. Even if it's just for a week, they're considered forever a New York Times bestseller.
Hand those stickers out like candy.
That gets thrown around way, way too much.
All right, so do you want to discuss the albums a little bit?
Yeah.
Or do you want to...
Let's do... you want to do A-ha first?
Sure.
Hunting High and Low. You talked about they were a synth-pop Norwegian band, and the most well-known single on the album, Take On Me, reached number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. And the thing that I found interesting about that is that even though they are a European band, that song was not an immediate hit when it was first released out there. Apparently, they had to rework it
a couple times
and remix it and try a few different arrangements.
And it was released... was it 3 times uh-huh. in the UK?
Yeah. It didn't catch on. I guess they knew that they had something, but they had to arrange it the right way, because I'm pretty sure I would have given up after the first try.
And I know I'm getting ahead of myself. That wasn't my favorite song on the album. Uh-huh. I don't know why they thought that was their... see, again, I'm not sitting in an office somewhere. Mm-hmm. Nobody's asking me to make these calls. And
right.
They were nominated for Best New Artist at the 86 Grammys, probably because of Take On Me. So
yeah, and I think that's another one. The Best New Artist at the Grammys thing really kind of irks me, because you get a lot of times they base it off of one song,
mm-hmm. right,
and then you never hear from these people
right.
again, but they've got a Grammy,
right,
you know, and it's not for Best Single, it's for Best New Artist. And I think for Best New Artist you should kind of have an idea that these guys are going to be like the next big thing.
Yeah,
and it was just, it's based off of one song, which is a pet peeve of mine. It really broke through in the United States, and I was telling you earlier about how my sister and I, in the mid to late 80s, MTV was just huge in our age group and time period. This the advent of MTV and the power that MTV had to influence the music industry was just so prevalent during that time, and A-ha had this crazy video.
Oh yeah,
that is still, and you're not a fan of the video.
But... so I'm not a fan of most music videos from that era, apparently, because I think it was such a new medium that people would confuse entertainment with quality, and they were sort of wowed by technological wonder that is rotoscoping, which is, it's not quite animation, but it's animating individual frames, and then instead of a really smooth transition, it's very visible that it's just a series of frames that have been introduced. And this was like the first time that it was done in a music video, and the latest time it was done, I don't know if this is completely fact, but the last time I saw it done was with Taylor Swift's Shake It Off video. It was a visual arts class, and the professor gave each one of the students who were participating over 50 frames, or I don't remember, maybe it was a certain time limit in the video, and they each did a rotoscope of it, and it was completely awesome. So I could see how people, when this first came out, just were blown away, because rotoscoping can be very cool. I just thought this version of it was really dumb. But I'm also coming at it from the... is it rose-colored glasses that have 2020? So there's some historicity? I don't remember. I have a bias and I don't like it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a generational gap there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I didn't like it. It was dumb.
But, you know, at the time, it was very groundbreaking and it was very unique. And I think just the fact that if that wouldn't have been a component of the video, if it would have just been all live action and the story that it told,
which in the 80s it was so common, and this still happens, you know, once in a while, it'll just be the band playing and mm-hmm. it'll just be close-ups of their yeah. face. that's just so boring to me.
It's very lazy.
I don't even know if it's lazy. It's not even superficial, but narcissistic to the point where you know they're not even playing the instruments. And you could see that with Aha too. That guy, he wasn't hitting any chords. He was just strumming that guitar, making sure his hair looked good.
That video, with the success that the video had, it really pushed that song. Like you said, I didn't even think it was the best song on the album.
I knew it.
And that's not me trying to be quirky music guy. Yeah. I know there's a lot of people like that. My dad. Who, for example, will make a Best of the Bee Gees CD and won't put Stayin' Alive on there. What?
Oh, you're so bitter about that.
It pisses me off to no end that you've got this CD that holds like 30 tracks and you can't find any place for Stayin' Alive, but you can find a live version of Barry Gibb singing with Celine Dion.
Okay, that does sound like something you should put on a greatest hits.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't.
It's a once in a lifetime.
That is indentment.
Nailed it.
But
you're at a loss for words.
I'm not,
how upset
I'm not
you are about
douchey
this.
Music guy where I can't say, well, I can't pick Take On Me as the favorite song because that everybody knows that, and that's when they sold out. And that's not me at all. I'm a total sellout.
Please, anybody,
100%.
If you have money, we'll sell out.
Yeah, anything for the right price. $20 is $20. Just the fact that it had this video that accompanied it, it gave it so much attention, and I think kind of bumped the song up to a higher level than it really could have been or should have been.
Yeah.
You know, if the song was just released by itself or had like a normal video accompanying it, there's no way it goes to number one. There's no way it goes to number one without that video.
Even though the total number of categories has doubled, only one other artist to date has won as many MTV awards as Aha for that 1 year.
And it just tells you how influential that video was and how groundbreaking it was at the time, even though you look back on it and, you know, use the adjective of dumb.
Well, but that's the thing is, first time I heard Take On Me, and pretty much consistently thereafter, it had been at college. And it was played, like, ironically. It's like, oh, listen to how crazy this 80s song is. And, you know, the same stuff with The Final Countdown or Toto or Corey Hart, Sunglasses at Night. Like, that's the context that I heard these songs.
Right.
And so, looking at it, it's even more ridiculous. And so, I guess I can't give it the credence that the crowd at this point loved it so much.
You know, I think too, the fact that when we think back to the 80s and we think back to music, we don't really think back to a lot of good music.
Right.
In
you
the
can
80s.
You can count on your hand the number of artists that you would still listen to,
right,
or still listening to, rather.
Right.
And then some of that, like, you can't remember if it came from the 80s. Like, I'm like, oh, Queen. And I'm like, I don't know when their best stuff came out. Or like Michael Jackson, it's like, I don't know when his best stuff came out, you know?
Right. I think Michael Jackson was the first one that popped into my head as something that was in the 80s. It was different, kind of broke from the
new
norm.
Wave, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. New Wave. That's the first thing that popped into my head. But that it was different from everything else that was around it, you know?
Right.
A lot of stuff sounded very synth poppy. I hate to come back to that, but that was, like you said, we got this new toy, let's play with it.
Right.
And I think there was so much good, there was just amazing music in the 60s, and the 70s was a totally different type of music, but there was a lot of very good music in the 70s. 80s was kind of a drop off, and then in the 90s you kind of had a little bit of a revival with kind of the Seattle grunge alternative scene, to kind of harken back to earlier. And then, you know, kind of in the 2000s, we've kind of gotten into a little bit of a rut again, as far as overly bubblegummy pop, losing the inventiveness and new things that you see every decade. You see something new, and I think we've kind of gotten into a rut in the last 15 or 16 years with that. But just looking back on the time frame that it came out, like I said, that MTV age just had such a big influence on success of music. If MTV liked you, you were gold.
Right, absolutely.
So this album, very heavy on the synthesizer.
Oh boy.
Not so much on the guitar.
Heavy vocals, though.
Yeah.
It's got some strong vocals.
Got some strong vocals. The guitars on the album are pretty much, I don't want to say non-existent, but
so they're almost like a rhythm guitar.
Right.
Just sort of,
they're not
it's
very
not a bass,
present.
But just in the sort of a track almost.
Right. They're not very present. They're kind of just an afterthought in there. Very heavy on the synthesizer, like we said. So what was your favorite track? If you didn't think that Take On Me was your favorite track, which one did you enjoy the most?
I liked a handful of them. I did like The Sun Always Shines on TV, and that was the song that got remixed into a dance hit.
Uh-huh.
But Dream Myself Alive, I think, was my favorite, just because a lot of the 80s music that I hear and that I'm not a huge fan of that sort of populated both of these albums were sort of, I guess you could call them love songs. They're introverted emo songs of that era. Dream Myself Alive just sort of took it in a weird, not psychedelic, but just the subject matter was a little bit more interesting to me. The instrumentation just seemed a little bit more, it seemed off the beaten path, and I thought they did a pretty cool job with it.
I read an article about the band and the fact that for a lot of the band members, English was not their first language.
The whole Take On Me, that's, we don't say that in American English
and,
or British English probably.
And so a lot of the lyrics were kind of, I don't want to say exactly lost in translation, but
Google Translate
was not available at the time. I think a lot of the lyrics don't resonate so much with American fans.
Right.
American fans connect more with the beats. And and that's kind of what kind of caught me, is that I like the song Love Is Reason.
Okay, that's a good one.
And I thought it was really upbeat. And I like, that's, you know, kind of more my style. They were heavy on the synthesizer.
And
was well done.
It didn't seem overdone.
Right.
Because you could hear in some other 80s bands where the synthesizer becomes dominant because they're like, oh, well, it's an instrument. We have to give it its solo too. But it's not going to be the same as a drum solo or an electric guitar solo.
And I thought that song was just, it was very catchy. It had very good vocal harmonies in there. And then what about your least favorite track on that?
Mine was, I wrote Blah next to it, Living a Boy's Adventure Tale.
Mm-hmm.
Their lead singer can hit some high notes, but he just goes into a super falsetto for, you know, the last quarter of the song. I didn't like it. And then also, again, with the writing, you know, keeping in mind that they're not native English speakers, the writing became really lazy and the rhyming just seemed trite. So it didn't, because I saw that they could be creative and that they could do some really good stuff, I found this one pretty disappointing. What about you? What's your least favorite aha track?
My least favorite was actually the title track.
Oh, Hunting High and Low.
Hunting High and Low. Slipping away, but I know I'll be hunting high and low. For me, it sounded way too much like Chris Isaac.
Okay, that, yeah, that's unusual.
Yeah,
I want to make that association, but when you say it, it makes sense.
Is it what a wicked game to play?
Yeah,
you know, I hate that crap. I'm sorry, Chris Isaac fans, who have, all two of you have unsubscribed.
Keep listening. We'll do it. No, we won't. We're not going to do it.
No, we're not going to. We're not going to do it. We've only lost two subscribers for me bad mouthing Chris Isaac. And then we've lost. You've cost us the whole country of Germany.
Sorry, Deutschland.
You've isolated a whole people. I've isolated two people. And one of them is Chris Isaac. When we do these albums, I really, try to
be attentive.
Yeah, I don't want to put on my douchey music guy hat, but I really tried to listen, and for that one, I really kind of had a hard time getting through it. I got through it.
Don't worry.
So I guess
it was like the second track.
I earned a Klondike bar, so I got through it.
I'm glad you made it through the title track.
I didn't care for it. There was a lot better tracks on there that were much more enjoyable to listen to.
Right. Okay, let's go on to Dexy's Midnight Runners. And I'm just going to give you a little background, what I found on why they're called that. So they call themselves Dexy because of Dexedrine, which is a brand of pharmaceutical, so I don't know how to say it right, but dextroamphetamine, which I'm guessing is some sort of connective to methamphetamine, because it's a recreational drug that gave you super amounts of energy. And they said, we went with Midnight Runners because we got a lot of energy from Dexedrine, enabling one to dance all night. I don't know why they want to go with Dexy's Midnight Dancers.
That's so awesome.
So when you listen to this, when you listen to Dexy's Midnight Runners, you do not think that, oh, these guys are probably high on meth and dancing a lot. Like this band, none of these songs I would want to, well, come on, Eileen, I guess I've danced to multiple times at weddings. Does that count?
In your parlor by yourself.
Just high on meth, fist pumping to Come On, Eileen.
Yeah. for future prospective employers, he was not high on meth.
Not now, but I'm like, Wednesday night, that's the only way to unwind is just blasting some Dexy's.
Blasting some Dexy's, exactly.
These guys seem like a bunch of morons. Like the more I learned about them, the more like they seemed like they thought they were really important.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't read about them until I listened to the album twice, but that sort of came out in the album. And again, I always go back to this. Whenever an artist will stop singing and they just speak over the song, I find that irritating.
Uh-huh.
And especially when they're exuding their outlook on life, it's always negative, or it's always they're more important than you and they're giving you their best knowledge, and it's always just something stupid. And that happened a handful of times. Plus, the names of some of the songs aren't really weird. I don't know. But my least favorite song was Precious. Just wrote Ugh next to that.
I saw that.
I'm like, ugh. And that's the thing, is some of it was pretty good, but it just got drowned out in some of the laziness of the band and its own self-aggrandizement.
You know, the thing I did like about the album was the big band feel.
Yeah, I like
that, which that they had.
Did not ring true with the whole Celtic folk, but I'm like, oh, is this early ska music?
Yeah,
like,
that's exactly what it sounded like.
What I appreciate about that is it's something different. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like signature move almost. When I think Irish music, I don't think big band. But I kind of liked it.
The other thing was that, I don't know if this was true for you, but unlike other podcasts that we've done, this was the first one that we've done where I had not heard either album.
Oh, no. I just heard the single.
This was the first time that I had heard. Yeah, exactly. This is the first time I had heard either album. The last one we did together, I had heard both albums. The one before that, I had heard one of the albums.
Right.
This one I had not heard either one, so I was listening to it with fresh ears, and I was surprised by how upbeat and big band it was, and the different instruments that they put into the arrangement. It was surprising in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Well, we started with least favorite, so start with least favorite.
So my least favorite was Old.
Yeah.
I could write Ugh next to that. just like you did. Actually, I'm going to do that right now.
It sort of seems that, I wouldn't say it's lazy, it's just trite. It's shallow writing, and mm-hmm. I think that's what, I thought that they could do better.
Yeah, it just wasn't an enjoyable track at all. I mean, it felt very old. Yeah.
Take that, Dexies.
Before I forget, I promised you a quick anecdote.
Okay.
About a friend of mine who will remain nameless, but when he listens to it, he's gonna know that I'm viciously making fun of him in reference to Come On Eileen, the single, the one hit single off of this album. We were looking online and we saw a shirt, and the shirt said, "I came on Eileen."
Oh no.
And of course, us being of shallow humor, and in his best Beavis and Butthead, "Huh, that's funny. That's funny." Yeah, you know, it's clever.
Yeah.
But then he says, "That's the Beatles, right?"
Oh no.
I said, "You son of a gun. You have lost any credibility with anything ever. What? Not just music."
What could he be thinking of?
He apparently thinks that Come On Eileen was performed by the Beatles.
I understand the sentence you said.
That's what he meant,
sure?
Mike.
Are you sure? He didn't think it was like, or come on, what's that girl's name?
Jude?
No.
Hey, Jude?
That was a boy. Jude was a boy. It's like Constance or something. Did you see the movie? You see All Across the Universe?
No.
Really?
No.
You'd like it.
No, it looked too Baz Luhrmann-ish for me.
I do not understand that reference.
It looked like I needed to get some of that meth that you...
Dexies? No.
Some of Dexies meth and then watch that movie.
I watched it. I was entertained. It gets trippy on its own.
Was it on a Wednesday night? Because that's your meth night. Because that could have been why you enjoyed it so much.
Fist pumping to some beats across the universe.
But that was my little anecdote that I had to throw out to him. So if you know who you are, you son of a bitch. We were talking about music videos earlier, and you were talking about...
Oof, this is a bad music video.
You were talking about uncreative music videos, and the video for Come On Eileen is not nearly as groundbreaking or creative as the video for Take On Me. And not that that's what we're comparing here, but in the MTV age, and just the fact that you have an opportunity to reach so many people via the music video, Come On Eileen did not take advantage of that.
No.
Definitely not a good music video. Not worth looking up on YouTube. Take On Me is. That's one that...
It's just see it. It's not good, but you should see it.
That's Mike's opinion.
Rotoscope. It's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's great. But
it's not great.
Still considered one of the, you know, when MTV releases their top 100 videos of all time, it's always going to be up there. It's never, you know, the AHA videos.
But not Come On Eileen.
Never going to be knocked out of there. Dexy's Midnight Runners is never going to be in there.
And it's not a sleeper. It's not like something that we accidentally looked over. I watched it. It was terrible. It was sort of like it was just a video of the band all wearing denim overalls. Mm-hmm. And then I guess there's a girl named Eileen. He keeps singing about a red dress, and she's also in denim overalls, and he just picks her up at the end, and then they're holding hands.
There you go.
Smash cut to holding hands. Dumb. Very dumb. Okay, so let's go on. What was your favorite song?
Excluding the one hit.
Yeah.
I don't even think, again, not me being douchey music guy, Staying Alive, not on the best of the Bee Gees. Dad. My
so
favorite
better.
Song was Jackie Wilson Said.
Okay.
When I heard it, I immediately thought of, oh, this sounds like John Mellencamp,
mm-hmm.
or it sounds like Van Morrison's Brown Eyed Girl.
Did you really think that?
I did.
Okay.
I swear to God, I thought that. I said, this sounds like a John Mellencamp song, or it sounds like Brown Eyed Girl by Van Morrison. And then when I looked at it...
Yeah, this is the reason for my incredulity. I'm not just being a jerk.
But I found out that it was a cover of a Van Morrison song.
No, I didn't know if it was a cover. I thought he just wrote it for them.
Yeah.
Is that what a cover is?
Turns out it was an actual cover.
Oh, okay.
Of a Van Morrison song. And that's why I think it sounded a lot different than anything else on the album.
Definitely.
And
because someone wrote it instead of just put words with instruments.
Yeah, it's not that the rest of the album is garbage and that was a good song, but it sounded very different than anything else on the album. And now I know why.
Yeah.
Because it was not originally their song.
I liked that song because it brought in some... You could definitely hear the big band brass in the back, and I definitely enjoyed that one.
You know, my dad's a big Van Morrison guy, and me, outside of Brown Eyed Girl, I don't really that familiar with
Moondance. It's good stuff.
With the catalog, go
look into it.
Sing a few bars, would you?
It's a wonderful night for a moon dance.
Oh, yeah.
Nailed it. So it was just a few bars.
Yeah,
all right, good.
You got it. I can name that song in three notes. I really enjoyed that version of the song, not knowing that it was a Van Morrison song originally. Just overall, the album, I liked the big band presentation. It didn't sound like it was too overly produced.
Mm-hmm.
The vocals were good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, overall, I did not find myself too often wishing that I could go to the next track. There was a couple times where I felt the need or the want to go to the next track. But I think, you know, overall, it was a pretty enjoyable album.
And my favorite song on this one was Liars A to E.
Mm-hmm.
I like that one because they had backup singers. So when you listen to Come On Eileen, you hear the band singing in, like, sort of a chorus. But this, they had a handful of tracks where the Scarlet Sisters would come in. And I really liked that. And I wrote Motown next to it.
Yeah.
This isn't hard and fast, but like what my image of it was. Because I like, first of all, I love harmonizing whenever that comes up. I just thought they added an extra layer to it that sort of distinguish it from...
No, I really like that too. I really like the, you know, the female aspect of just bringing a different intonation to the harmonies. And it did sound Motownish. Mm-hmm. You know, it sounded, you know, Diana Ross and the Supremes.
Definitely.
Ish.
Not to that, you know, like high quality, but
no, but
it's in the same genre.
Yeah, it was. I really like when that's kind of like a nice little surprise on the album. And Prince did that, you know, quite a bit when he would have a couple tracks on the album where he would bring in a really good female singer to kind of play off of his unique vocals. And it was, I really liked that as well. I'm glad that it wasn't on every track. I'm glad it was kind of, you know, gave a nice little break and a nice little mix things up a little bit that I really enjoy. So do you want to talk about our criteria for picking a winner here today?
Yeah, let's jump into that.
All right.
First, we always use this one for albums. We talked about re-listenability.
Yeah, I think that's just one that's always going to be on there when you think about movies or books or music or anything. Talking about whether you would want to come back to them again and them again and watch them again. I think that's always going to be a universal way of looking at pop culture entities.
Right. And then we talked about which one had the better single. So which one did we enjoy more? Bring in like the music video stuff for that, or do we just want to say,
let's just do it just strictly audio?
Okay, the way that we actually listen to it.
Right.
Do you want to go over the next two?
Sure. Talked about if we took out the one hit single and just looked at the rest of the album, they were both 10 tracks, I believe.
Exactly.
Which one had the better quality of album minus that single? And then the last one was looking at that one hit single, an accurate representation of the rest of the songs on. Kind of a outlier that was created just to get radio airplay or something like that. We wanted it to be an accurate representation of the band and the album and the actual tone that they were going for.
Because there's a handful of examples of heavy metal band or like a hard rocking band released almost like an acoustic song. If you're familiar with Swing Lifeway song that was on 105.7 The Point 2005, 2006 by Rise Against. It's just this like song about, you know, two people in love, and they're talking about like swinging on a porch swing. And then the rest of the album's Rage Against the Machine, angry about, you know, the government, that sort of stuff. I really like that band. It's just, it's interesting what would be a single and who decided that that would be a good idea to do.
Yeah, it's almost like the record company or the producer said, you need to have something on here that we can sell, not just album of your music.
Right.
You need to have something that's sellable.
We need to diversify.
Right. And they create a single that's totally out of their norm simply for the fact that they want to sell it. We wanted to see which one of these singles is more of an accurate representation of the whole album.
Right.
So, first one, Re-listenability. Which one did you pick as your winner in that category?
I went with Aha on that one because I thought that the synth pop was a little bit more playful. The songs were a little bit more fun to listen to. I enjoyed. There wasn't really any sort of story arc in either one, but I kind of liked the progression of the music and where it sort of started out a little slow and then it would build up. Synth pop, we got to experiment with that a little bit. Got the vocals, got to do a little bit more interesting stuff, and I got a little bit more out of it the second time I listened to it.
I actually picked Dexy's Midnight Runners on that one.
Great.
And I don't know why, but I just kind of, when I got to the end of both albums, and I got to the end of Hunting High and Low by Aha, didn't really have a desire to listen to it again. Or if it would have recycled back on my iPod, I probably would have switched to something else.
So whereas, I'm going to stop you right there. I didn't like Aha's album. Uh-huh. I just thought it was better.
Right, okay.
It would be difficult for me to pick songs off of either of these albums and tell people who've never heard them, you should definitely listen to this 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, I think for me, I think for Dexy's Midnight Runners, when I got to the end of the album, I guess because it was more upbeat and it was, and I like the big band style, appealed to me a little bit more than the synth pop. I think that's why I think that I would listen to it a little. Or some of the big band groups that have been out in the last
Mighty Mighty Boss Tones,
which, like real big fish.
So both of those are technically, I mean, they classify themselves as ska, but I think that's like the current.
Right.
It's sort of a current manifestation of big band, and then but a little bit like that punk or pop energy and sort of attitude.
Yeah.
Because big band doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Or, but that's not true. My grandma still gets those samplers somehow. They're like in the Best Buy section where it's like the box sets. She's like, ooh, big band. I'm like, grandma.
Right.
Get out of Best Buy.
Yeah, just don't ever step into a Best Buy for any reason.
We're a Circuit City family, and she's like, that's not true.
We're an Ultimate Electronics family.
We're Radio Shacks or nothing.
We're Silo. I mean, you don't even remember Silo.
Of course I don't remember Silo. I don't know. Edison. I was a big Edison fan.
Yeah. I like that type of music. And it's kind of hard to differentiate between the tracks because they all sound kind of similar. For me, it was more enjoyable to listen to. So I went with Dexy's Midnight Runners on that first category.
So which single did you prefer? We had Take On Me or Come On Eileen.
I don't know if I was influenced by how much impact the video had when I was younger.
Okay.
But as far as a single, I preferred Take On Me.
Okay.
Over Come On Eileen.
So we talked about how the video was groundbreaking for its time, how MTV probably played it a million times, and you probably saw it that many times.
Right.
What about the song did you think was better than the Come On Eileen? Or what about the song was endeared you to it?
I like how it starts off. I like how it kind of it comes in real quick. They let you know that we love the synthesizer. I like that. I think it flowed a little bit better. I think, you know, Come On Eileen's got a lot of different, it got a lot of tempo changes and things like that, especially in the last verse where it really slows down almost to a stop and kind of picks up with very limited instrumentals and pretty much just vocals at that point. Just as far as what I found myself like when I sing along with them, I like attempting to do the vocal range changes and take on me where it...
They're extreme.
Darn near impossible to do for a layman singer such as
Or a
myself.
Lame man, or, if you
yes,
will.
Oh, exactly.
Take that.
Yeah. I like the way it kind of builds up with that, you know, it's take on me and then as high as you could go. It's a little bit more a steady feel to the flow of the song. So I think I kind of preferred that in isolation as a one-hit single over Come On Eileen.
Mine was Come On Eileen.
Okay.
And sort of the first time I ever heard it was in the movie Tommy Boy, when they're on their road trip and they're listening to the radio and they'll like stop on certain things and sing along. So I remember that, and it's always at weddings. And so I think that Come On Eileen is more fun to sing along with. And it's when you described Dexy's Midnight Runners as a Celtic folk band to me, I said, oh, well, of course, because I've heard Come On Eileen, and that, you know, they're singing Touraie and all Toularoo. They're, you know, skipping around and stuff. And then I listen to the rest of the album and I'm like, there's no Celtic folk anywhere. Like, Come On Eileen was the most authentic folkness that I heard.
So that kind of goes into the next category. We take the
single off.
Let's skip that for just a second.
Okay.
While we're on that topic, let's go to the last category because that kind of flows in exactly what you were talking about. Whether the single was an accurate representation of the rest of the album. So I'm guessing that you went with Aha.
Definitely.
For that one, because you felt that Come On Eileen kind of fit into that Celtic folk range, but that the rest of the album didn't.
I was sort of conflicted on how to put this, because when I was describing the album Touraie, I wrote down schizophrenic because they didn't seem to land on one kind of song that they were going to make, because we talked about there was some Motown, there was some big band brass, there was the folk song that was like the only time I figured out that they were possibly Irish, and all this other sort of stuff, and it just sort of seemed to, you know, swing around and it couldn't make up its mind. I thought that Aha, with their this is synth pop, you know, we're going to go all over the place with our singing range, but we're going to hit a lot of high notes, and we're not that good with English. I did think that when I heard it and I heard the rest of the album, I said, okay, it would make sense that those two would be packaged together. Dexy's Midnight Runner, their album didn't really seem that strong in general, and Come On Eileen was sort of the crowd pleaser.
I felt the same way. I went with, on the accurate representation category, I went with Aha as well. It's kind of like, we know who we are,
right?
And we're this is what we're gonna give you.
And we're gonna synth, we're gonna pop,
we're gonna synth pop the hell out of this,
and we're gonna be such a new wave,
right? Yeah, we're gonna cause a tsunami
of newness,
of newness all over you.
Pants are gonna be sopping with newness.
So I went with Aha with that one as well. And then the last category, which is actually the third one that we talked about, was if we take away the single, what about the rest of the album? What were your thoughts on that?
I'm going to go with Aha again. The album quality, I didn't think either of these, maybe Aha like a 5.5 or a 6 out of 10. And Dexy's Midnight Runner, like strong 4, probably a 3.
Out of 3?
Out of 10. Yeah, I'm going to give him a 6 out of 3. What am I?
That's how good he loved it.
Wrong. If I took off Come On Eileen, I would not have ever listened to Touraie. Because I'm like, when I got to the end, I'm like, okay, good. This is that. That was an interesting thing. Take On Me was the first track on the album, mm-hmm. where Come On Eileen was the last track. Mm-hmm. And again, not sitting in a room telling people what to do, because they won't give me that job. But I was always under the impression that the single was always the first track, or one of the first tracks. Mm-hmm. And that's, so you, if it were a tape or a CD, you would listen to that, and then you would get the rest of the album. That's when they put in their experimental weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. So I think if they took Come On Eileen off, I would not have listened. I would not have enjoyed Dexy's Midnight. I would have given it a 2.
I got you. I think I'm going to go with Dexy's Midnight Runners on this one, because...
Okay. Why?
And I don't know why.
That's the whole point of this. You describe why.
Okay, so let me attempt.
It's because of the meth.
It was a Wednesday night, which is meth night.
I was fist pumping my brains out.
At the Bono house. I happened to be there on a Wednesday.
Was it the overalls?
No, I think it was more the fact, and I kind of came back to what I said earlier about how the songs kind of blend together. For me, it wasn't unenjoyable to listen to. Okay. I didn't really enjoy either one of the albums, but I didn't hate them,
right,
either. I didn't feel like it was a chore to listen to them, but it's not like I would search out either album, you know, if I wanted something fun to listen to. I think it's kind of in the same vein that I picked them for re-listenability, is because it sounded less 80s to me, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And I know there's, for like I said earlier, with this negative kind of like negative stigma on 80s music, and I think that the A-ha album kind of personifies that. They sound like a lot of the albums sounded like back then.
Definitely.
And I think that Dexy's Midnight Runners didn't sound like a lot of the pop albums sounded like back then. They might have sounded similar to a lot of the music that was in their genre.
That could be, yeah.
But I think it sounded different than a lot of the music that was coming out in the 80s. And I see a lot of, we talked about some of the groups that have come along the last 10 or 15 years that sounds similar to that ska style of that Dexy's had, even though they're not identified as that kind of band.
No, they're blue-eyed soul.
Of course. They sound a little more modern, I guess, is maybe why I kind of lean toward that as far as quality of the album. It sounds more like a departure from the 80s, which I have such a negative connotation with.
That makes sense. Okay.
So we've got...
It was pretty existential, but I understand.
So we've got, out of the four categories, basically eight votes.
Nobody has to keep count because we did it for you.
Between the two of them.
This is like the closest we've come.
This is the most
disagreements we've had as well.
And you know what? And I think...
Joe, we're growing.
I don't think that's it at all. I think we're regressing.
Ooh, I don't know. We're
regressing back to the mean.
Classic.
But I think...
To the meme?
To the meme, yes.
To the meme?
To the meme.
Okay.
Probably because we didn't really identify with either album.
Right.
Or didn't overly enjoy either one of the albums. We were kind of in the middle. Either way, we're kind of...
Neutral?
Neutral's good. I think it more passive feelings about either one of them. We can kind of take them or leave them.
Right.
And I think when you don't have strong feelings one way or the other, you kind of get more of a balance of opinions. Because if you look, our feelings were more in the middle, in the neutral area. And our final tally was in the neutral area as well. So there wasn't, you know, a clear winner or a clear loser. But...
Oh, the clear winner's A-ha. Because...
We have 5 votes total out of the 8 total votes that we receive in the 4 categories. A-ha is your winner over Dexy's Midnight Runner. So if we were going to suggest one of these albums to you, which we are totally not doing...
Probably get the A-ha 50 album remastered edition.
Yeah, you're gonna need to pick that up because somebody decided that it was a great idea.
There's like 30 versions of it live because that's the only one that people know at the concert.
And
so,
for the people over in Norway that are listening to this, they're like, of course a-ha is better.
I don't even think they're going to say that. They're probably picking, like, they're like, you know who... I don't know why a-ha got popular. This other band from Norway is super good. That's
right.
What they're saying.
It's kind of like when my dad said that Fountains of Wayne was at least as good, if not better, than the Beatles. And this is a guy who knows a lot about
music.
He
also likes the Beatles. So
he does,
that's
quite
a
bit.
That's a bold statement.
It is a stupid statement.
I don't know.
Is what it is.
See, here's the thing. I only heard Stacey's Mom. So my hands are...
Well,
I don't have a dog in this fight right now.
That's a show for another day. But if we were going to suggest one of these albums to you over the other, I think we would go with a-ha's Hunting High and Low over Dexy's Midnight Runners.
Found
to
that
you.
This was the best album of a one-hit wonder.
Right. Based on our criteria, based on our very subjective criteria.
And VH1's list.
And VH1's very subjective list. We had to have something to draw from, and that's what we went. So, winner for this week is a-ha's Hunting High and Low.
And now we're on to the recommendation part of the show. Two artists who are considered one-hit wonders, again, relatively subjective. Dan, who do you want to start with?
I basically went through the VH1 list and tried to pick an artist who was considered a one-hit wonder that I was familiar with the entire album.
Okay.
So that I can make an accurate recommendation.
So you didn't just find a single and then listen to a new album?
Right.
Okay.
Right. I picked one that I was already familiar with.
Good,
and that I had already listened to many times and had in my catalog. So my recommendation is in the old school rap genre, also known as New Wave.
Right.
I went with the Sugar Hill Gang, which is one of my favorite old school rap artists. Of all time. Very much when I started listening to Sugar Hill Gang, it was them and Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five.
Okay.
Very similar styles. Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five are a little bit more political. Sugar Hill Gang was a little bit more just about having fun and things like that.
By the way, can you tell us the single that they put out?
And the single
that made them popular,
that everybody probably knows, is Rapper's Delight, which is a hip, a hop, a hibby, did a hibby, did a hip, hip, hop, you don't stop. The rockin' to the bang, bang, boogie, set up, jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to be.
And how long is that song approximately?
It is nearly 10 minutes.
Right.
I believe. It talks about going over to your friend's house and her mom makes some nasty food,
right,
and you got to get some KO pectate because you're sick to your stomach, and
those were the days.
Bust Lois Lane out with your super sperm, and
it was a different time.
Things like that. But
was this on the radio?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
The first time I heard of it was in The Wedding Singer, of course.
Right,
that's
right. With the grandma.
And
the thing about the Sugar Hill Gang is that, you know, the album that it was probably considered an EP, I guess, because it was only, I think, six songs on.
Yeah, but each song's 10 minutes.
That's true.
That's not.
That's true.
That's probably longer.
But
that's an LP, a long play.
It's off the self-titled Sugar Hill Gang album, the Rapper's Delight is. But, you know, they had several other songs over the years that I remember, not considered hits, but to me, when they would pop up on the CD when I was playing it in my car, I would definitely listen to it because, to me, they were considered hits. And they even had one with Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five called Showdown,
ooh,
which is kind of like basically mocked up like a rap battle.
That's awesome.
Between the two. That's really cool. So I suggest that too. It's not on the same album, the self-titled Sugar Hill Gang album, but this was, since that's what we're doing here, taking the one-hit wonders and looking at the whole album, that's one that I would suggest. Mike, who is your favorite Sugar Hill Gang member?
Dirty Dan. I don't know.
No.
I don't know any of the names.
Big Baby Jesus?
That's ODB.
Okay.
I know that one.
So you've got Wonder Mike.
Ooh, dang.
Master G. Hen Dog. rest in peace.
Oh.
And DJT Dynasty. So I'm gonna guess you're gonna go. All right, let's just say. Let's just say on the count of three, who our favorite one. One, two, three.
ODB.
Okay.
Wonder Mike.
I thought you were gonna go with Wonder Mike because
it's my
your name is Mike. Good choice.
That is okay. So, joking aside, I definitely was gonna go with Wonder Mike.
Okay. So Sugar Hill Gang self-titled album is my recommendation.
Okay.
For this week's episode.
Wait, who's your favorite Sugar Hill Gang member?
I said Wonder Mike.
I thought you were just joking.
My name is Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello.
Okay, that's on me. I should have, sorry, guys. Shouldn't have said anything else. In the same vein, I picked an artist that I had listened to. I think I listened to them because of the single. I can't remember the order. They only had one song that made it U.S. Billboard charts. I think they're number three or number one. And then the second single they released was not on the list, but and it did well in other places. It's the Icelandic band called Of Monsters and Men. And they came out in the late 2010s. They had this song called Little Talks, and it was on the radio, which was pretty unusual for the time because it's sort of like new age folk music. Not new wave.
Would you say new wave? Would you consider, would you classify it as new wave?
Yeah, I would. So
so both of ours are new wave. That's interesting. That
I mean,
we would both go in that category.
I guess the issue is that they're both apples in this case then.
That's right.
Apples to orange. Oh, no, we're not comparing, we're recommending. Anyway, I really like this band because they do a lot of cool stuff with their instrumentation. They have a banjo in there. They have some good keyboards, a little bit of electrical sound, but almost all of their lyrics get into the sort of like metaphysical and unusual range and just some interesting stuff going on. And then they have their lead singer, the female lead singer just has a gorgeous voice, and then their male singer does some cool harmonizing with her. They were sort of riding the coattails of when Mumford & Sons got really popular on the radio. And I love folk music and had been listening to, you know, a handful of bands that I got to see them in concert. And, you know, they have a bunch of CDs, but they're just never on the radio. And then Mumford & Sons sort of got everybody on board with Little Lion Man. And then they ended up having a bunch of singles and then, you know, releasing more albums, and they had singles and stuff. Of Monsters and Men just didn't do it in the U.S. apparently. They've released a second album. They're still doing good, putting out good music. It's just they never caught on, which is interesting because they won the equivalent of Iceland's America's Got Talent or American Idol. I don't remember, because when I looked it up, it said this is Iceland's Battle of the Band, and I'm like, how big's Iceland that they just have a Battle of the Band? Mm-hmm. But maybe it was like a TV show or something, but this band won it, and I think sort of on the surge of that, they got this single out to the international community. Oh, by the way, it's all in English language, too. I'm not, like, a huge fan of songs that are strictly in Icelandic. Although I'm sure they're beautiful, if they're anything like Sigur Rós. If all bands are like Sigur Rós, Iceland must be a super chill place.
When you mentioned Mumford & Sons, it kind of harkens me back to my friend from earlier.
Uh-oh.
And another reason why
hey, Jude.
why I take issue with his musical choices, he is such a big Mumford & Sons fan that he has more Mumford & Sons on his iPod than he has Rolling Stones and Beatles combined.
There's only three albums by Mumford & Sons.
Exactly. That and the fact that he thinks that the Beatles performed Come On Eileen. Still no excuse for mixing up the greatest band of all time with Dexy's Midnight Runners. There's no excuse for it, ever. Ever, at all.
That's fair. Those are our recommendations. Let's go on to the plugs section of the show. Don't listen to a word I say. The screens all sound the same. Though the truth may vary, this ship will carry our body safe. Dan, what do you want to plug?
Probably just same things I always plug, which is my MMA podcast, which is Punch Drunk Radio. It is on iTunes now. You can subscribe and get the episodes as soon as they go up. So if you search for Punch Drunk Radio, or if you search for my name, Dan Rhino, R-Y-N-O, or just my last name, or anything like that, you'll find it. It's starting to move up on
the charts,
on the popularity index, because more people are starting to download it. So you can check it out there. If you would rather have the video versions, which have some graphics to go along with them, you can go on YouTube and subscribe to the Punch Drunk Radio channel. Or there is a website now, punchdrunkradiomma.com, that has all of our Twitter feed and Facebook feed, but also has directly all of the YouTube episodes on there. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Dan Rhino.
And don't forget to check out Dan's Dexy's Midnight Runners tribute band.
Danny's Midnight Runners.
Dan's Noontime Joggers. Yeah.
It's new wave.
Yeah. It's like new.
It's
new
very wave. New. It's very new wave. Very experimental.
All synth pop. Now I'm getting confused.
I would classify it as Blue Eyed Soul if I had to.
Do you have blue eyes?
Put my finger on it.
I'm not going to look at your eyes.
I am not in a Dexy's Midnight Runners cover band.
He is the cover band.
Don't even search for it.
It's just him.
That is not true. But you can check out Mike and his Aha cover band.
Oh, ho!
Mm-hmm.
It is not New Wave. We just do covers of Grandmaster Flash. Yes. Just singles.
in a Norwegian accent with synthesizers mixed on top of it. It's great stuff.
It's okay.
Look it up. It's called Mm-hmm.
Oh, ho.
And it's amazing. But thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. And this has been another episode of Comparing Apples to Oranges. Thanks for listening.
Cue the music.
Thanks for listening to episode 5 of the podcast, and I hope you enjoyed it. Look us up on Tumblr. We are Comparing Apples to Oranges, that's all one word, .tumblr.com. And I'm going to put a whole bunch of stuff up there, especially for this episode, and a little bit for the old episodes that I've been dragging my feet on. That's where all the links for my co-hosts will be, and some info for upcoming episodes. Any comments or ideas for future podcasts, please send it to our Twitter is @thecatopodcast. And then email us at catopodcasts@gmail.com. Our intro and outro music, as well as some of the music beds, was Thumbs Up by an artist named Leisure B. And if you like that, go ahead and check his stuff out at humanworkshop.com. All right, this is Comparing Apples to Oranges. Goodbye.